From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
I think a trade deal with China is good for the world.
That was U.S. President Donald Trump on Thursday in Washington as he prepared to meet with China's Vice Premier Liu He.
It's good for us and China, but it's good also for the world. I think it's very important. We'll see if it happens. We've never done a deal like this with China. And it's a very unique set of circumstances, but it's a massive deal. Could be one of the, I guess it is, if you think about it, the biggest deal ever made. There can't be a deal like this. No matter where you look, there can't be a deal like this. This is the granddaddy of them all. And we'll see if it happens. It's got a very, very good chance of happening. I think that it will be great for both countries. But it will be a much fairer deal for us because over the years we've lost a lot of money to China. China's done very well. And I don't blame China. I say it all the time. I don't blame China. I blame the people that sat right at this desk. They should have never allowed that to happen. So it will bring a lot of things back. I think it'll be great for the United States. I think it's going to be hopefully really good for China, too. It's going to be good for everybody. Yeah.
What's still left to agree to, sir?
We have things. We have things. We're talking intellectual property protection and theft, talking about certain tariffs. It's very important that certain elements of the tariff that is in discussion right now. We have a number of things, but we've also agreed. We've agreed to far more than we have left to agree to. And in fact, I can say that some of the toughest things have been agreed to. We have some things that are actually easier right now that we're doing. But it's a very, very, using a word that I don't like using too often, but it's a very, very comprehensive deal. It's very complete. We discuss everything. We talk about everything. When we first started, people would say, well, you'll never talk about intellectual property. You'll never talk about a vast array of elements. Every one of them is not only talked about, but highly negotiated. And whether it's our farmers or our technology people, all of them will be really happy, and I think China's going to be very happy, too.
What's your plan right now on tariffs? What would you like to see happen with tariffs?
Well, I don't want to say that to you, but I'm going to be discussing that with the Vice Premier in about 5 minutes, as soon as you leave. But just a lot of good things are happening. A lot of really great things are happening. And I think very important is the relationship with China. Is very strong, probably the strongest it's ever been, in a sense, and yet we're negotiating a strong deal. But I think our relationship is at a point that's about at the highest it's been, and that's not a bad thing. That's a very good thing.
Is there anything like
some
negotiation and do you plan to have some remove all tariffs to respond to Chinese?
Well, when you say negotiation, he's a very tough negotiator, and so is President Xi. But, I mean, it's so nice when I see the fentanyl, because that's been so... We lost 77,000 people due to fentanyl. And that was a very important thing, and I really appreciate it. And this is before the deal is done. This is something that China is doing before the deal is done. I think you're going to see a big impact, a tremendous impact. Yes, ma'am.
Mr. President, if the deal is reached, what kind of benefit will it bring for both countries?
Say it again.
If there is a deal, what kind of benefit will it bring for both countries?
Well, I think it's going to be great for China in that China will continue to trade with the United States. I mean, otherwise it would be very tough for us to allow that to happen. And we are China's by far biggest trading partner. They are a tremendous trading partner in the other way, too, from our standpoint. But it'll be a great deal for China's because we're going to continue to deal. We're going to continue to have a relationship in terms of trade. Otherwise, it would be very tough to do that in a large way, as we have in the past, because it was a very one-sided thing. From our standpoint, we love dealing with them. They have certain products that are tremendous. They have certain pricing advantages that we take advantage of, a lot of advantages. And I think just the relationships between the two countries are very, it's very strong. And that's an important element of what we're doing, having that, maintaining the great relationship, which perhaps we would maintain anyway. But certainly we maintain that with a deal like this. This will be a a really terrific, very unique deal. This is an epic deal, historic. If it happens, we'll see what happens.
The president discussed a number of topics with the press in between meetings.
Are you sending Herman Cain to the Fed, sir? And are you looking for people who
I've recommended Herman Cain. He's a very terrific man, a terrific person. He's a friend of mine. I have recommended him highly for the Fed. I've told my folks that that's the man, and he's doing some pre-checking now, and I would imagine he'd be in great shape. I find Herman to be an outstanding person, a truly outstanding individual. I would think he would do very well there. Yes.
Mr. President, is there still an imminent threat of you potentially closing the border, or is it everything for immigration?
Well, you know, Mexico has been doing a very good job the last 3 or 4 days since we talked about closing the border, which is very real. But what's more real initially is tariffs on the cars coming in, a 25% tariff on the cars being made in Mexico coming in. You know, Mexico, prior to my becoming president, took close to 30% of our car business. Okay, that's a lot. That's a big, big chunk. They did that under NAFTA. And for years I've been talking about it. I think NAFTA is one of the worst deals ever made, one of the worst trade deals ever made, maybe the worst. And Mexico took a big chunk of our car business, which I don't like. And I haven't liked, and I've spoken about it long and hard, long before I became president, when I was a civilian, so to speak. And I will say this, that Mexico in the last 4 days has really done a great job on their southern border with Honduras, with Guatemala, with El Salvador, of grabbing and taking and bringing people back to their countries because they're not going to come to our country. We're not going to allow it. What's happened on our southern border is a disgrace. And Mexico has brought people back. They've told people you can't come in. And that's happened really over. They've done, as I understand it, over 1,000 today, over 1,000 people yesterday, over 1,000 people the day before. Before that, they never did anything. So if we don't, and they have the strongest immigration laws, as strong as there is anywhere in the world, they can do it if they want to do it. They've never really wanted to do it for many, many years. And we've told them, if you don't do that, we're going to close the border. But before we close the border, we'll put the tariffs on the cars. I don't think we'll ever have to close the border because the penalty of tariffs on cars coming into the United States from Mexico at 25% will be massive.
So the border stays open at least for a year?
No, I didn't say that. We would start with the tariffs and we'll see what happens. But they are removing people out of Mexico on the way up to the United States. And if you take a look, you'll see a big difference. Now, maybe by the end of this news conference or maybe tomorrow, that'll stop. And if that stops, we're doing a big tariff deal. And that'll be fine with me, too, because you know I like tariffs. I'm one of the people that really like tariffs. Okay.
President, this year marks for the 40th anniversary of U.N. China relations. What's your comments on this deal or this threat?
You really have to speak louder. Yes, what? Louder. Up.
Sorry. This year marks 40th anniversary of U.S. and China relations.
Yes.
What's your comments on this deal or process?
What's your comment on the 40th anniversary of U.S.-China relations?
Oh, okay. Well, my comment is it is 40 years. It's 40. That's a lot, but not that much. Again, I think I could just say what I've already said. The relationship is strong. We hope it's going to get stronger. And I think we can do a lot of things militarily also. For instance, they're making a lot of weapons, tremendous weapons, and so are we. We just had $716 billion approved for military last year. Now we're possibly going to do more this year. And between Russia and China and us, we're all making hundreds of billions of dollars worth of weapons, including nuclear, which is ridiculous. And I would say that China will come along, and I would say Russia will come along and make sense that we're all doing this. I think we're the leader. I think we're always going to be the leader. We have to be the leader. I think it's much better if we all got together and we didn't make these weapons. So I think that's something that could be a phase two after this is done. But as you know, China is spending a lot of money on military. So are we. so is Russia. And those three countries, I think, can come together and stop the spending and spend on things that maybe are more productive toward long-term peace. I don't know if I'm speaking out of turn. We haven't discussed this very much, but I feel that, you know, the military expenditure of you and Russia, us, it's a lot. A lot of money could be put in other things. Would you like to respond to that?
I think it is a very good idea.
Yeah.
We try to make a balance.
President Xi, are you committed to that happening, and when will that happen?
Well, if we have a deal, there'll be a summit.
No,
I would say we'll know over the next 4 weeks, but I think that's correct, Bob, wouldn't you say?
Yes, sir.
And I look forward to seeing President Xi. It'll be here. And if we have a deal, then we're going to have a summit. If we don't have a deal, we're not going to have a summit. But there's a very good chance that we'll have the summit. Or how about one more? Jeff, you have one?
I'd like to follow up on the sticking points, Mr. President. Is enforcement one of the big ones that you're still dealing with?
Yeah, enforcement. We have to make sure there's enforcement. I think we'll get that done. We've discussed it at length. I think we're going to get that done. So just to finish, the deal is coming along really well. We'll probably know over the next 4 weeks. It may take 2 weeks after that to get it papered, but I really think that over the next fairly short period of time, we're going to know, and it's looking very good. A lot of really good things have been negotiated and agreed to. I would really say, and I say it again, a lot of the most difficult points that we didn't think we could ever do or we wouldn't agree to on both sides, have been agreed to. We've negotiated out some of the toughest point, really the tougher points, and but we have some ways to go, and I think we have a very good chance of getting there. I want to thank everybody for being here, and in particular, I want to thank the Vice Premier and his entire group of very, very talented representatives. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody.
Take a look at it. Yeah. I'll look at it.
The Trade Minister recently said the negotiations between U.S. and China would affect everyone, and he urged the two sides to feel a sense of global responsibilities. So what do you think of this issue?
I think there's truth to that, a global responsibility. Who did you say said that?
Yeah, global responsibility.
Who said that?
Regarding trade and...
No, who said it? Who said it?
Malaysia, trade minister.
Okay, well, I think it's true. I think the word global responsibility, those are two nice words. And frankly, maybe we do have a global responsibility between the United States and China. I think it's actually it's well brought up. It's true. I think we do have responsibility to the world, both countries. And that's what I think that's maybe to a certain extent, that's a big reason here we're here. This will be a tremendous thing for the world. Forget about China, forget about the United States. This will be a tremendous thing for the world if we get it done. Let's see what happens. Thank you all very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. None whatsoever. He's a highly respected man. He's a friend of mine. He's somebody that gets it. And I hope everything goes well. But Herman Cain is a very good guy. Thank you very
Richard
much.
Richard Wolff is professor of economics emeritus at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. He's the founder of the organization Democracy at Work. Speaking on Sputnik Radio's program Loud and Clear on Thursday, he said,
"Look, China is an ascending global economic power. That's what Americans don't want to face. The United States is a descending power. This is an old story. It's what happened to England relative to the United States. It's what happened to England relative to Germany, et cetera, et cetera. And so when that happens, there are all kinds of frictions. The country going down doesn't want it. The country going up can afford to be open-minded about this because they're going up. It's not really about the virtues of either side. It's about the conditions that they face. And all we're witnessing is another one in the long history of frictions as the ascending power rises and the descending power is looking for people to blame for its descent, because turning inward on its own system is simply beyond the level of pain it can tolerate.
Meanwhile, President Trump's remarks regarding the arms race seem to be echoed at the United Nations on Thursday. This was a briefing by Izumi Nakamitsu, who's the High Representative for Disarmament Affairs at the UN, supporting the Non-Proliferation Treaty ahead of the 2020 review conference.
His Excellency Foreign Minister Heiko Maas, President of the Security Council, Director General Yukiya Amano, Excellencies, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, I congratulate the German Presidency for convening today's briefing. The possible use of nuclear weapons, either intentionally, by accident, or through miscalculation, is one of the greatest threats to international peace and security. The potential consequences of a nuclear war will be global and affect all member states. Therefore, it is entirely appropriate that the Council discuss measures related to preventing such a catastrophic outcome, and, in particular, the one instrument that has perhaps played the greatest role in doing so. The Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, or the NPT, has been an enduring feature of the international security landscape for nearly 50 years. The NPT is widely acknowledged as the cornerstone of the international non-proliferation regime and the essential foundation of nuclear disarmament. Its role as a pillar of our collective security is likewise an accepted fact. There are four key elements to the success of the treaty. First, it contains verifiable non-proliferation obligations in the form of safeguards on peaceful nuclear activities. Second, it is the only treaty that contains legally binding commitments to pursue nuclear disarmament. Third, the treaty establishes a strategic balance between three pillars of nuclear disarmament, nuclear non-proliferation, and access to the peaceful uses of nuclear energy in ways that seek to maximize their benefits for all states' parties. Fourth, its new universality provides a clear authority and ensures almost global subscription to its normative framework. Throughout its long history, the NPT has provided tangible security benefits, not just for its states' parties, but for all states. That President Kennedy's dire prediction that there will be between 10 and 20 nuclear-armed states by the 1970s did not come true can largely be laid at the feet of the NPT. That in 2019, there are only four states with nuclear weapon capabilities or suspected capabilities outside a treaty remains one of the greatest success stories of multilateral diplomacy. We can all agree that the spread of nuclear weapons to greater numbers of states equates to greater possibility of their use. That this has not happened is because of the value states' parties continue to place in their membership of the NPT and the non-proliferation benefits it provides. We must today reconfirm that the security benefits that have been derived from the implementation of Article 6, those related to nuclear disarmament, have been equally important. Under the leadership of nuclear weapon states, states' parties' efforts to implement Article 6 helped ease global tension, reduce great power conflict, and build confidence among nuclear-armed competitors. Reductions in nuclear arsenals, frameworks to reduce nuclear risk, and efforts to drive forward multilateral nuclear disarmament are all effective measures under Article 6. And all helped to create an environment conducive to broader international cooperation for various global challenges of our time, from peace and security to development and climate change. The two pillars of the NPT disarmament and non-proliferation are two sides of the same coin. Backward movements on one will result in backward movement on the other. Implementation of commitments made under both strengthens mutual trust and advances the cause of a world free of nuclear weapons. As the Secretary General has stressed, disarmament and non-proliferation are important mechanisms that help make the world safer and more secure. There are measures to help prevent, mitigate, and resolve conflict, and can and should be pursued in tandem with other peacemaking and security processes. Excellencies, the NPT has proven remarkably durable. However, that durability should not be taken for granted. Today, we find ourselves in an international environment defined by competition over cooperation and the acquisition of arms prioritized over the pursuit of diplomacy. The disarmament success of the post-Cold War era has come to a halt. In its place, there is dangerous rhetoric about the utility of nuclear weapons and an increased reliance on these weapons in security doctrines. Expensive modernization programs that will make nuclear weapons faster, stealthier, and more accurate have effectively announced the arrival of a qualitative nuclear arms race. Rapid technological developments will begin to impact our international security environment in many different ways, including potentially lowering barriers to the acquisition of nuclear weapons. Last but not least, regional conflicts might heighten proliferation drivers. The disarmament and arms control framework upon which the gains of the post-Cold War era were made is eroding, but we have nothing else yet with which to replace it. As a result, the prospect of the use of nuclear weapons is higher than it has been in generations. Together, these developments are placing the NPT under increasing stress and are exacerbating the fault lines that have been clearly evident between states parties for some time now. In this context, the 2020 review conference will be a defining moment. I do not believe that the failure to achieve consensus in 2020 necessarily signals the demise of the treaty. But it will set a poor precedent, and it will further highlight divisions between states parties. It will raise questions about willingness of states to seek collective security for all, rather than narrow, short-term, and eventually unsustainable security benefits for individual states. I believe we should avoid this situation. The 2020, the 50th anniversary of the NPT's entry into force, and the 25th anniversary of its indefinite extension presents a golden opportunity to make the practical gains that will ensure the treaty's continued viability. A strong political level reaffirmation by all to the treaty will be important. In the short time remaining between now and 2020, I hope states parties will consider four things. First, the need for demonstrated implementation by all states parties of commitments made during previous review cycles. Past commitments cannot be arbitrarily abrogated, or else they become no more valuable than the paper on which they are written. The failure of implementation undermines potential future gains across all three of the treaty's pillars. Second, the need for genuine dialogue about our current predicaments in international security and how the NPT can be a vehicle to reduce nuclear risk and enhance stability in ways that also take concrete steps toward nuclear disarmament. The third, the need to ensure the strategic balance between the pillars. The NPT is often described as a grand bargain. I see it more as a series of bargains, or rather commitments, made. It is important to recognize that they are all mutually reinforcing. Fourth, the need for creative thinking about what a successful outcome looks like in 2020. Since 1995, review conferences have produced decisions, action plans, practical steps and measures to improve the effectiveness of the review process itself. In 2020, states parties need to consider what possible outcome can both ensure success and drive forward implementation of the treaty. Excellencies, the security benefits provided by the NPT have been manifest in times of relative stability. They should be even more so in an era of international turbulence. The NPT should be a mechanism through which to help create a safer and more secure world. It should be a basis on which to build trust and confidence, to address emerging threats and challenges, and to lay the ground for future gains in the pursuit of our collective goal of a world free of nuclear weapons. Whatever a new arms control and disarmament approaches in the 21st century might look like, one thing is clear. The NPT will still be at the center of our collective security mechanism. It will have to stay fit for purpose. I remain convinced that a 2020 review conference is an opportunity to make headway on all of these goals and to make sure this linchpin of international security remains fit for purpose through the next 25 or even 50 years. I thank you very much.
As the U.S. attempted regime change in Venezuela continues, Venezuela's foreign minister was in the capital of a country where the U.S. failed to achieve its goal. Press TV's Muhammad Ali has more.
Venezuelan Foreign Minister Jorge Arreaza arrived in Syria on Thursday and met President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus. In their meeting, President Assad said the U.S. and some Western countries have adopted hostile policies towards Venezuela because Caracas takes stances which are not in line with their interests. Arreaza also said the two countries are facing the same enemy. He said the U.S. is trying to take control of Venezuela and its resources and decide its future.
This morning, I had the honor of meeting Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. When President Assad explained to me about the days prior to the crisis in Syria, what instantly came to my mind was what Venezuela is living today. It's the same enemy with the same interests. I told President Assad that Syria's experience benefits us in Venezuela and gives us examples in how to confront such a conspiracy.
Arreaza was speaking in a joint press conference with his Syrian counterpart. For his part, Syria's Foreign Minister Walid al-Muallim answered journalists' questions on recent developments in Syria. Muallim also pointed to U.S. President Donald Trump's attempts to grant Israel sovereignty over the occupied Syrian Golan. He said such attempts only added to the international isolation of the U.S. He said Syria will liberate the occupied Golan Heights with, quote, all possible means, and that all options are on the table to do so. Syria's Foreign Minister Walid al-Muallim said his country is looking forward to a complete victory in Syria in the near future. He promised that every inch of land will be liberated, whether the terrorist-occupied areas in the north of the country or the Israeli-occupied Golan in the south. Muhammad Ali, Press TV, Damascus.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.